Well, what we're going to do tonight is I want like to go through and actually going to start a series of lessons. They're not going to be really complex type lessons. But it would help all of us if we understood our Bibles a little bit better. And so what I'd like to do is start going through the books of the Bible. I'm going to try to just do a lesson every once in a while on a particular book, just looking at it as an overall survey of it so that we got a grasp of what's in each of the books. And we're going to start with the very first book, which is Genesis. It's my hope that, you know, we won't go into any great details, just enough to get familiar with the context. And like I said, it may not, none of the lessons are going to be overly complex or deep or anything like that, but hopefully we get into something that's familiar with. The book of Genesis actually takes its name from the very first line in the book. So if we turn over to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, Genesis 1 verse 1 says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." That very first phrase, "in the beginning," is basically what the word Genesis means. It's a Greek word, kind of slightly altered as it got translated through languages, but it's a Greek word that means beginnings. The book that we have at the beginning of the Bible is a record of how the world, as we now know it, began. How did it start? We look at its organization. The book is composed of 11 records. There are 11 sets of records that go through the book. And if you take your Bibles, you might want to maybe jot this down the side. What we find is there's a word called in the Hebrew called Toldeth. And that word says is translated as record or book or some generation sometimes is translated as. But it's a signature line saying this is my record. And it's like somebody writing down saying sincerely, and then you put your name down at the bottom of it. If you look at Genesis chapter 2, at the very beginning of verse 4 is the first one. It says this is the account, that's that Hebrew word told that. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord made the heavens and the earth. Here is the account of creation. The records of the heavens and the earth. In other words, this is God's history of the creation. No one else could present that history because no one else was there except until the very end of it. God recorded for us how the world was made. We jump to Genesis 5, in the first verse of that chapter. It says, "This is the book of the generations of Adam." This is Adam's signature, basically. So what came before that from Genesis, basically Genesis 2, verse 4, the end part of that one, down to Genesis, beginning of Genesis 5, verse 1, that's Adam's record of how he came to be and what happened during his life. Jumping down to chapter 6 and verse 9, it says, "These are the records of the generation of Noah." And so from the chapter 5 to chapter 6, verse 9, we have Noah's records. And you can see that each of the records are slightly presented in different ways. For instance, Adam counts more like stories. Noah gives us mostly who was born to whom, genealogy records. Jumping to chapter 10, and in verse 1, it says, "These are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth." These are Noah's sons. And these are their records of what happened in their lifetime. Genesis 11, and in verse 10, says, "These are the records of the generations of Shem." So one of those sons, three of them gave us an earlier record. Shem then gives us a more focused record for his family. Down to Genesis 11, verse 27, says, "These are the records of Terah." That was Abraham's father. And that gives us yet another set of records. Now the next one is all the way to Genesis 25 and in verse 12. And this one's slightly different because it says, these are the records of the generations of Ishmael. Ishmael's records are actually embedded in a larger record. And that is found in Genesis 25 verse 19. And it says, these are the records of the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. So Isaac wrote this, put in his brother's records, which is mostly family history, down towards the end of his own records. Then we get the similar type of thing in Genesis 36. In verse 1 it says, these are the generations of Esau, that is Edom. And it also says in verse 9, these are the records of the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in the hill country of Seir. These again are Esau's records that are embedded in his brother's account, which is ends at Genesis 37, verse 2. These are the records of the generation of Jacob. So Jacob at the end of his records gets some of his brother's records. And then the last part, you actually have to look at Exodus chapter 1, verse 1 to see the signature line. It is, now these are the names of the sons of the records of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt. So the last part is Jacob's sons' records. And actually knowing that they're composed of sub-records, that Genesis is not a uniform book, helps you to understand it a little bit. Because one of the things that sometimes confuses people is there's, you can run across things, like for instance, you start with chapter 1, and you read about the creation. And you get all through all 7 days, and you get up to verse 4, and then all of a sudden you're back to the sixth day again. And you go through, and you're reading through, and you get up to Adam. And then all of a sudden you're back to a little bit about the creation again, and then Adam's children, and goes on from there. And each time you hit one of these records, you suddenly jump backwards. The answer is, well, that's the way most people write. If I were to ask you to write your life history, where would you start? Well, my parents met at so-and-so, and they got married, and they lived over here, and then I was born, and you start back a little bit before you were actually born, say a little bit of where your parents and them came from, then get into your life history. That's the way most of us write, and that's the way Genesis is written. That's why there's overlapping pieces of information in that book. Each author starts by recounting a little bit of the history that led up to his time and then proceeded with his own records. Now, the book of Genesis is ascribed to Moses has always been put in as one of the five books of Moses wrote. But one of the interesting things, all the other four books, you can find some place where it's quoted and says, Moses said. You can't find that with Genesis. And most likely what it is Moses put together Genesis, who was the editor of it. He wasn't actually the original authors because there were 11 other people involved. Or 11 sets of authorships anyway. Now if we want to understand the book, we also need to understand this overall organization. Not only is it a composition of 11 accounts, but it's also divided, you can see it in three sections. Genesis 1 through 11, so chapters 1 through 11 are a general history of the world. It talks about mankind in general, though there's emphasis on one particular family's lineage. It takes us up through Noah and his family. But it's an overall discussion of that. When you get to 12 to 36, or instead of focusing on all of mankind, we discuss three patriarchs. Those are Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So that middle section of Genesis is focused on three particular people. And we see their life story. And they're called patriarchs because they were heads or fathers of their families. They were the beginning of those. And then from 37 through 50, you could call this another patriarch, but Joseph is not really the head of the family. And we have basically a story that focuses on one child of Jacob, Joseph. Other children are mentioned, their other ones are discussed, but the story overall focuses around Joseph. So far we got a little rough idea of what Genesis is about. Let's go back to the beginning of it again and discuss what's actually there, the events that are there, and some of the main characters. Genesis 1 and 2 tell us about the creation. Chapter 1 tells us the creation from God's point of view. Chapter 2 tells us from man's point of view. There's a little bit difference in detail. So chapter 2, as you might expect, puts a lot of emphasis on the sixth day because that's when man was created. There's more detail about it than in the first chapter, which balances all the days, basically treats them all roughly the same. Genesis 3 through 5 talks about the fall of mankind. We have Adam and Eve partaking of the forbidden fruit that God told them not to eat. So they fell away. And basically, other chapters document how mankind continued to fall. It wasn't just Adam and Eve, but each generation continued to be wicked thereafter. Especially chapter 4 talks about that. Chapter 6 through 9, we find out mankind got so corrupt that God said, I'm sorry I ever made these people, and wipes out the earth, except for one family. And so that's the records of the flood. How God destroyed the whole earth, saved one particular family through an ark, and then made a covenant with them to say, okay, I'm not going to do that again. But then makes a covenant with that family to start the earth all over again. Genesis 10 through 11 tells us about how the nations came about. What we find out is mankind still sins. And they rebelled against God. And God basically, in punishment of them, changed the languages and scattered mankind across the earth. And that's how the nations arose and all our various languages arose. Starting with chapter 12 through 23, it's an account of Abraham, his life. And chapter 12 is Abraham's call to come out of the land that he was living in for a land that God promises to him. Chapters 13 and 14 is about Abraham and Lot and how they traveled through Canaan. Chapters 15 through 18 is about Abraham and the promises God made to him. So all the covenants that God made with Abraham particularly. Then chapter 19 talks about Sodom and Gomorrah. That's the famous cities that were destroyed because of homosexuality. So that's the recorded in 19. Chapter 20 is about Abraham and Abimelech and how Abraham lied yet a second time. Chapter 21 is about Isaac's birth. 22 is a very famous chapter about God asking Abraham to offer his son Isaac. Chapter 23 then talks about the death of Sarah. And then the story then focuses on Isaac. Isaac goes from 24 to 26. In 24, we find a bride for Isaac. The whole chapter is about the travel of the servant that went to find a bride so that Isaac could marry somebody who was religiously the same. 25 talks about Abraham's death and about the birth of Isaac's sons. 26 talks about Isaac and Abimelech. Different Abimelech, but same city. They seem to call their leaders Abimelech, like Egypt called theirs Pharaoh. And it's basically almost a repeat of what Abraham had done. Then from 27 to 36 is Jacob's account. We have the deception of Isaac by Jacob in chapter 27. We have the brides that end up marrying Jacob in chapters 28 and 29. We have the sons of Jacob, the birth of all his children. He had 12 sons. Those are recorded in chapter 30. Jacob's return back to Canaan is in chapters 31 through 33. The incident with Dinah and Shechem that ends up destroying the city is talked about in 34. And then we have the promises made to Jacob that are from Genesis 35 and 36, the renewing of the promises that God had made to Abraham. In the very last set of chapters, from 37 to 50, again, are Joseph's account. We have Joseph's dream in 37. We have the story of Judah and Tamar in 38. We have Joseph's slavery in 39 and 40. Pharaoh's dreams and Joseph's rise of power in 41. Joseph then tests his brothers, 42 to 45. Israel moves to Egypt, 46 through 47. And then we find about the death of Jacob in 48 through 50. And at the end of 50 is the death of Joseph. So that's overall summary of what Genesis is about. It's talking about the beginnings of the world and focuses on one particular family, or lineage, we should say. But why do we have Genesis? Well, one, it gives an account of how we started. But one of the things its purpose is to show to us, to prove to us, that we're sinful. Mankind's sinful. Has been that way since the beginning. We started out with Adam and Eve. They were given a very, very simple law. Go back to Genesis chapter 2. Starting with verse 16. Genesis 2, verse 16, it says, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, from any tree of the garden you may eat freely. But the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day you eat it from it, you shall die." God gave mankind, he planted the garden for him. And it says, every type of fruit tree and every type of flowering tree was in that garden. Start thinking about in the world how many fruit trees and flowering trees we have. That has to be a huge garden. And in the very middle of it, it says he planted this one tree that he called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He says, that one, don't touch. So if you imagine you got a forest of gorgeous trees with lots of fruits, thousands of trees probably. And right in the middle of it, he says, that one don't touch. That one don't eat from it. That one, you can't eat the fruit of that one. Sounds like a simple law. But what we find when we get to Genesis 3 is that they couldn't keep it. They broke that law. Being tempted by the serpent, which we later are told in the Bible is Satan. And what we find as we continue on is mankind goes from bad to worse. Adam and Eve couldn't keep that law. Their son, one of their sons commits murder, killing his own brother. We find polygamy starting out in chapter 4. And it just goes downhill from there on until we get to chapter 6. And it says it's so bad, God had to wipe out the whole earth. And God does wipe out all the earth but one family. But what we also see when we get to Genesis 9, after they get off that ark, is that sin didn't go away. Because Noah gets drunk. Sin still remains among men. His descendants, they're the ones that built the Tower of Babel. And God says, I want you to go, subdue the earth. They said, hey, we're going to go live in one spot. We're going to build this great tower as a monument to ourselves. We're going to circle the wagons and we're going to be safe. That's when God created all the languages and scattered the people. Even Abraham, whom we admire as a father of faith, we find that he lies a couple times. We find Lot, his nephew, being tainted by sin. We see how the corrupt the world is beginning to get when there's homosexuality in several cities in a valley. Isaac gets later distracted by worldly things. He's focused on wells. He lies too. Jacob is deceived and then also was deceived. Simon and Levi, because of his sister, what happened with Shechem, they're violent. They destroy a whole town over that one incident. The incident wasn't right, and what they did was not right either. We find Joseph, when he starts out, he's a prideful. We almost probably want to put the label brat with him, the way he treats his brothers. Grows out of it. But he wasn't a very nice kid when he was young. He was a tattletale. As we go through it, we see with Judah and Tamar, we find Judah visiting prostitutes. What we get as we go through Genesis is that what we find is we see sin constantly being pointed out. It doesn't go away. What Paul says in Romans 3 is proven by Genesis. Romans 3 and verse 23 says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's what we see in Genesis. Everybody sins. It's a continuing problem. And yet at the same time, Genesis tells us, though, that there is a hope of rescue. And it's interwoven through this story. See, when mankind falls, when Adam and Eve first sinned, in a part of that, consequences of that sin, God gives a hint of hope. Take a look at Genesis 3, verse 15. Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, but you shall bruise him on the heel. And that's a reference actually to Jesus coming. This is the first hint. There was going to be someone of the seed of Eve who would come and give a crushing blow to Satan. Even in the midst of mankind is going from bad to worse, there was one person who stands out. In chapter 5, we find this mention of a man named Enoch. And it says in verse 24, Genesis 5, verse 24, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God was with him. He stands out in contrast to what the rest of the world was basically doing. And what he helps us understand is that sin wasn't there because it had to be. Some people did manage, for the most part, to live righteously. We see that it was a choice. And there was at least one person who chose right. Sin was wiped out in Genesis 6 through 9 by the flood. But we also have to remember that one family was preserved. Going to 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter refers to this account. 1 Peter chapter 3 and starting with verse 20 says, who were once disobedient when the patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark in which a few, that is eight persons, were brought safely through the water. And corresponding to that, baptism now saves you. Not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. One family was preserved. And that becomes a symbol for us to remember. In the promises made to Abraham, in Genesis 12, as he's about to leave his family and his land to go where God directs him, Genesis 12, and starting with verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and on the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Here was a promise. Through you, all the rest of the world is going to be blessed. A hint of that comes even greater in the sacrifice of Isaac in Genesis 22. After Abraham proves his willingness to be obedient to God, God says in Genesis 22, verse 14, "And Abraham called the name of the place, 'The Lord will provide,' as it is said, 'In that day, in the mount of the Lord it will be provided.' Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, that you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Indeed, I will greatly bless you. I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your seed shall possess the gates of his enemies. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice.'" And again, there's that promise that there was going to be a seed who would conquer and who would also be a blessing to the world. And we also find that the concept that evil and the suffering that results from it, while it's taking over the world, it doesn't have full control because God can change things. That's really what the story of Joseph is about. Joseph's own brothers sell him off into slavery. But what we find as we go through it is find out that God changes that. It sounds like evil, but God changes that evil into something good. In Genesis 50, starting with verse 19, Genesis 50, verse 19, it says, "But Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? And as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order that to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive.'" They thought they were doing evil, but God changed that into something that preserved people. And we can see that story can repeating as well. We talk about the sin and the suffering that goes on in the world today. And all the way through the Bible, it says God uses that for good. It trains us, it strengthens us, and God can change that around. So that what was evil becomes something that ends up doing good. So Genesis gives us a start to the theme of the Bible. That mankind has sinned and they need rescuing. That God has the answer to that question. And leads us to the conclusion thereof. It's a brief summary. Hope it'll help a little bit. I know I jumped through all the chapters real fast and probably didn't have time to take much notes. But I hope that'll be at least beneficial. I like to go through a lot of the other books as well that way, just to give us a kind of an idea of what's in each of the books. You may not remember everything that we talk about, but we'll give you at least a rough idea. But what we'll do tonight, as we do every night that we gather together, is offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here who wishes to become a child of God, sin is prevalent in the world. We all succumb to it. But God does provide a solution to it. And if there's anyone here wishes to become a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here is a child of God, like the prayers of brethren, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song for us.